The soft food disposer eliminates rinsing dishes before they're washed. Two sanitizing cycles scald dishes until they're sparkling hygienically clean, and that saves time. The Goo Gulper cleans itself as it cleans the dishes, and that saves time too. Hogan's has Gibson's newest dishwasher. Put a big red bow around it and give it to her for this Christmas.
Coke at your house? During the holidays, there should be. Holidays and Coca-Cola. The more, the merrier.
Your local bottler of Coke is White Horse Beverages Limited.
Thank you very much. Our guest, Charlie Taylor of Taylor & Dre Store. Mr. Taylor, let's start at the beginning. When did T&D Store, when did your father, Mr. Taylor, meet Mr. Drury?
Well, it all goes back to the 98, and the word was all wrapped around gold. And my dad, he was in Cool Guardy Goldfields at the time, and things were petering out there, so he decided to come to this famous Klondike. And Mr. Drury, he was in Whitby, Ontario, in a trade down there, and he decided to come to the Klondike. So the poor man's route was up from Ashcroft, and my dad with another Australian had a two-man outfit, and they struggle the trail, and Mr. Drury, he had a five-man outfit, and they headed along the trail from Ashcroft, and they got snowed in 98 at Telegraph Creek.
This is the overland route. Now,
this is the overland route that came from Ashcroft up along through the Stikine, up to the Stikine Valley. From the Stikine, it branched into to Atlin, or I should say the headwaters of the Hootalinqua River, the Teslin River, and they, from where they continued on going through the Klondike. Now, the things were going a little tough with Dad because his outfit wasn't big enough, and he was feeling pretty downhearted. So some fella came along down the line. He said, you look pretty tired, Mr. Taylor. He says, yes, yes. He says, well, look, why don't you go up a little further up the line? There's another limey up there by the name of Drury, and you can meet up. Anyway, that's how they met. It was on a kind invitation like that. And they got wintered in at Telegraph Creek, and Dad couldn't carry on, so he went down to Stikine and to Wrangell and then up to Skagway and worked a few months on the railway, where Mr. Drury, he toughed it out, and he went through to Teslin and worked his way over to Atlin. Atlin had just become a new strike. Dad was shoveling snow at the railway up near the summit, and he got fed up with this when he heard about the strike. So he and 10 other fellows headed over to Atlin. And who do you think he met in Atlin? None other than Mr. Drury with his tent all set up. That was in the spring of 99.
And when did they decide to go into business?
That very day, Mr. Drury turned to my dad and he said, Taylor, you want to make some money? And Dad said, well, that's what I came here for. Well, he says, I got the outfit. And he says, there's a lot of downhearted people, and they're going to leave. And he says, they're going to leave their stuff laying on the ground, and I think it's an opportunity to buy it up. You got any money? Dad said, sure, I got $200. So that's how the thing all got started. And so Dad was had a great deal of mercantile training in England before he headed out into the wilder country. And so he went around and bought, and Mr. Drury, he got busy and sold.
So the first Taylor & Drury store in the north, the first Taylor & Drury store anywhere, was in Atlin, B.C.?
June 28th, 1899 was the first Taylor & Drury enterprise.
And when did they move into Whitehorse?
Well, in the They ran out of supplies in Atlin, so Mr. Drury thought my dad should go down to Vancouver, Victoria, and Victoria, of course, was the biggest center at that time, and he bought supplies to bring up to supplement, as they had bought and sold everything that was in Atlin. So he supplemented, and at that time, the White Pass Railway had just got to Bennett. So he set up camp at Bennett, because there's hundreds and hundreds of people ready to come down the river. So he sent a messenger over there and said to Mr. Drury, come on over, the gold mine is right here. So he packed up and he came there, and they, well, like many of the sales that were made for the boats going down the Bennett and on to the Klondike were made by Mr. Drury. So they set up shop there until the rail got through to Whitehorse, and in July 1900, they just put their bag and baggage aboard the train and came down, established in Whitehorse.
So your second operation then was on Lake Bennett?
That's correct.
And your third, of course, was Whitehorse.
Whitehorse,
which became the center.
That is correct, John.
And that was in 1899.
That was July 1900, they established in Whitehorse, when the rail came to Whitehorse.
Huh. We're talking with Charlie Taylor of Taylor and Dory's store, and he's giving us some of the background. The next question we're going to ask him is about the first Christmas in Yukon with Taylor and Dory's operation. We'll get around to that in a few minutes. A reminder that if you have a question or a comment, the number is 667-7891. The program's Talkback, and we'll be back in a minute.
This Christmas, give sportswear by Skidoo. Hogan's has ladies' Skidoo suits, one-piece and two-piece at one-third off. Men's suits, quilt-lined, knitted collar and storm cuffs for $39.95. Helmets from $6.59. Goggles from $2.95. Snowmobile mitts, $4.98. Flip-up visor, $9.95. And Skidoo boots at $19.95. Sportswear by Skidoo from Hogan's, the Santa store, where it's not too late for a Christmas budget. Ladies, dress up for Christmas now with a new outfit from Modern Air Ladies Wear. There are outfits from loungewear to formal wear. Modern Air has beautiful Angora sweaters, delicate lingerie, gracious hostess wear, and ideal party tops. And here's great news, everyone has a chance to win $50 in a draw on December 20th. You get a free pair of pantyhose with every purchase over $40 while they last. And here's more great news, Modern Air is open every weeknight till Christmas, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Ladies, dress up for Christmas now at Modern Air Ladies Wear.
This is an invitation for you to view the 1973 line of Datsuns at Car Care Motors. Enjoy a cup of Christmas cheer while viewing. With every 1973 Datsun sold now, Car Care Motors is supplying a radio and a complete winter package absolutely free. See the 73 Datsuns now at Car Care Motors, 4th and Jarvis.
Send them more for your money car. Datsun, the more for your money car.
Tell us about the first Christmas. Was the Taylor and Dury operation in Yukon, and did you have a Santa Claus like a lot of this, like your store and a lot of the other stores do now?
John, I just couldn't help thinking of the first one. Of course, it's what my dad told me. We had 175 kids down at our a little quiet Santa Claus for the preschoolers this year, but my memory went back to the time that he was telling me that it was quite a rustle and bustle in the 1900s when Whitehorse was just beginning. Of course, the Barrack Square had been built, and there had to be a community Santa Claus.
What, the Barrack Square, what's that?
That was the RCMP.
Same location they are now?
But that was a complete square that where the subdivision is right now. A subdivision or the town.
The Whitehorse Detachment.
Detachment,
correct.
Yes, correct. And so Dad decided that with the rest that there had to be a Santa Claus, and he was a single man, so he got all fancied up, and of course there was no reindeers kicking around. So Matthew Watson, that's Bob Dad at Carcross there, he came to have his dog team at the disposal. So away went Santa Claus and his driver, and they headed around town and they delivered all the parcels. Well, the Barrack Square was fairly well drifted in at the time, so Matthew says, let's cut across country. So they cut across country with the dogs. There was about six dogs there. And there was a young constable there, and he just didn't take delight because this wasn't quite the thing to do. So he run the both of them in. And I think it was Pennefather was the inspector in charge, and it didn't take him long to get Dad out of the out of his troubles. Anyway, that I often think of the first Santa Claus in Whitehorse that was
wound up in jail.
Not quite in jail, but he was about there. Yeah.
And your father was the Santa Claus, was he?
Oh, yes, he was the Santa Claus, and Matthew was the driver. Yeah.
Another Christmas story that you had, you mentioned earlier about Mr. Dury's first Christmas in the Yukon. Could you tell us about that?
I would say it was maybe his second or third. Mm-hmm. We had just started the trading post system, and down in Little Sam, we had a fellow by the name of Jack McCauley, and it was Jack's turn to have his holidays. So Mr. Dury went down to relieve him. And it was just before the boat stopped running, and it was October, and of course he was with the, it was strictly a trading post program, there's nothing but natives there. And they all headed out to the trap lines up the Little Salmon, where your new highway is going into Anvil. And they were spread around there. As you know, there's a Drury Lake there, and that was named after Mr. Drury. Well, all the natives headed out, and Mr. Drury was left alone. And this is quite an experience for a young chap be left alone, and he gave us a story of how he kept from going, well, what do they call it, cabin fever?
Stir crazy.
He was completely alone there, and he made a real job. He got up in the morning regularly, he washed and he shaved, and he went out and he split his wood. And then he went into the store and he would dust the store, and then he'd go back and do up his dishes. And then he was quite a good man in following up his parents' program of the reading of the Bible. He read his Bible, and he went right through his holy routine every day.
Just as though he were living in a community with a lot of people.
With a lot of people coming, and he wrote his letters, and he did all the things, and he said it was the only thing that could have kept him sane. But he said 2 days before Christmas, he heard the jingle of sleigh bells, and he said it was the most exciting day of his life. He just ran out the door with his arms wide open, and he hugged the first person in sight, because he'd never been left alone for 6 weeks like that in his life. And I think that would be a real exciting Christmas.
So it turned out to be a real good
and
Christmas for him.
And he had a great big family there with all their furs and all their potlatches and all the rest. So it was a really real Christmas.
We're talking with Charlie Taylor. And we're reminiscing about Taylor and Drury's operation in the Yukon, and we'll get into that operation, the numbers of stores and how deliveries were made and so forth, how long it took. Then we're going to get into the very interesting topic of the money, the money that was used for Taylor and Drury's operation, minted particularly and especially and only for the Taylor and Drury store. The program is Talk Back. The number is 667-7891. If you're out of town, please call Collect. We'll be back in just a minute.
Heading out, having fun, homeward bound on the run, with the crowd on a date, on the job, running late, or taking life easy.
The fine folks at Helen's Chicken Village have for the youngsters a Colonel Sanders bobbing doll for half price. That's right, the Colonel Sanders bobbing doll is on for 99 cents. Get one or two for the little ones for stocking stuffers this Christmas. Helen's Chicken Village delivers that finger-licking good Kentucky Fried Chicken. Call 667-7755. Do it now.
Kentucky Fried Chicken in your neighborhood. Colonel Sanders and his boys make it finger licking good.
That's the sound of a Polaris truck, heard from coast to coast, down the winding Alaska Highway, through the mountains and valleys of British Columbia, the long straight roads of our prairie provinces, the bustling centers of Ontario to the Atlantic provinces. Polaris drivers ensure your goods arrive at their destination safely. If your move is across the street or across the nation, Polaris can do it. Call 74322, Polaris Moving and Storage.
Mr. Taylor, in those days in the Yukon, there weren't many women, but the saying goes that behind every man, there's a woman. And what about the women in your father's life, or the woman in your father's life, and in Mr. Drury's life way back then?
Well, we'll start off with my mother, because she was the first one in the Yukon. And as I've just mentioned before, Mr. Drury had taken this Christmas deal at Little Salmon, and there was no communication at all at that time. So he told my dad, he said, look here, my mother and my sisters and brothers will be writing. Would you open up the mail and just handle it as if it was your own? And Dad said, well, that'll go along with me, because he says, I've only got my mother left in England anyway. And he said, I'd just love to do it. So he opened up the mail, and Mrs. Drury Sr. got her answer. And also there was a sister, and she wrote a very, very fine letter, and she was a school teacher near Sleaford. And so he got writing there, and she wanted to know all about the Northern Lights, and quite exciting. So when Mr. Drury came out of the woods, he was relating his stories to my dad, and Dad said, well, sound was pretty quiet there for a while, and he says, I've been really hitting the ball here. He says, I'm going over. He says, my mother has just died, and he says, I'd like to go over and see her grave, and also drop in and see a few of your family, because they're my family now. And he says, I'm quite interested in that sister. She writes a wonderful letter. So this is all fine. Off he toddled off across the Atlantic. And the next thing Mr. Drury got was a cable. This is what they call it in the old days. Got a cable, married your sister, hang tough for another month, we're going to Ireland. So that's how the affair went. And they arrived back into the Yukon, and of course my mother was highly delighted with Whitehorse. They had electric lights in 1903.
In Whitehorse?
Yeah, 1903. Yeah. And so she settled in and became part and parcel of the life. Now, Mrs. Drury, she came in as a nurse, and I believe it was 1915. And of course, Mr. Drury, he was our uncle, of course, and Uncle Will stayed with us for years and years. But he thought, my gosh, why shouldn't he have set up his own program? So he and Lucy Webster was her name, married and raised a family. And of course, we still see our famous Bill Drury on the streets this sun.
You were talking, Charlie, during one of the breaks about your mother giving names to quite a few of the native children of the day.
Well, as you know, there was many of the people had their own names, and they felt a little bit unhappy that they just didn't have names similar to the white people. So there was a constant request for one. When old Harry Silver Fox that just died the other day, he had an Indian name, and down at Little Salmon, he was the one that started the name Silver Fox. And they say, what's a good name? And there were some furs laying on the floor, and he says, what's wrong, Silver Fox? That's a good name. So that's how I got his. Now, my mother, we used to make trips in the summertime up to Teslin Lake, and these people were very, very interested in getting their names changed. And I think Mrs. Johnson's name, you would know her, Mabel Johnson, that's one of the names. I can remember quite clearly. It's that age group. And one peculiar one she always reminisces about was the time that as she up visiting, and there's a little Indian girl ran by, and they said, hey, Gasoline, come here. And my mother said, that's not right. Now, who give you that name? She thought some white man had pulled a joke on it. You did, Mrs. Taylor. Oh, no, no, I didn't give a name like that. Gasoline. You mean Kathleen. So that was one of the names. And there's many, many names. And I would say that the group of people that are my age and slightly older, my mother had a lot to do with that. Caroline, she's in town here right now. Caroline, it escapes my name now.
Tell me something, Charlie. A lot of the native people have are named what are normally two first names, like Jimmy James, a fellow I worked with out at Carcross years ago, Johnny Johns. Mm-hmm. How did this come about?
Well, these were all names that were given as the white man came through. But oft times you'll see these people that end up with a Christian name on the tail end. This happened the first generation, because they reversed their names. It was Joe Charlie, then they called him Charlie. It became a Joe. They reversed the names. That's why there's so many Charlies, because there was Charlie Taylor. Well, then they kept the name Charlie and put another Christian name ahead of it.
Getting back to the store operation, Charlie, how did it develop, and how many stores did you have at that peak operation?
Well, as time went along, we started, actually the first store was down at Hoodlink with the mouth of the Teslin River, as they call it now, and then we went into Little Salmon, and then we got up the Ross River. We had 13 stores altogether, and this was at the time when the native people lived in bands, similar to what we realize what Old Crow is, the only remaining, you might say, the tight little group, mm-hmm. and this was due to communication.
Well, did you establish your stores according to where the native bands were
we
established?
We moved right in where they were, and we had steamers and the likes to get up to the various rivers, and they cut wood for us, and we traded with their fur.
Did you own your own steamers at all?
Yes, we had first the Kluane. She was built in 1909. She got too small for the job as we got into the 1920s, and we bought the steamer Thistle off the White Pass.
And how did you delivered your goods, obviously, to your stores by steamer? Any other means of transportation?
That was all there was, except overland, and of course that was a very high figure, and of course if they ran out of things like yeast or something like that, maybe we used to run we had teams like pickup trucks like they have today, and they would run through and maybe make two or three trips a year in and pick up the mail and essentials like yeast if they ran out of yeast or candles or something that could be packed.
I gather it was primarily a trading operation then.
It's solely a whole trading program, truly and solely a real trading program.
And fur, of course, you would take furs in on trade for goods from the native people.
Yes, and there was one thing they were very, very definite about. There was absolutely no barter. The two gentlemen agreed upon this right at the start. It had to be a trade program. In other words, if they sold, say, $500 of the fur, they had to get something in kind for mm-hmm. it. It wasn't, you remember the awful stories they had about some of our early traders stacking guns up and mm-hmm, putting beaver mm-hmm. pelts. Well, this was strictly out. They had to have a medium of exchange.
And that brings us into the question of the coins. These coins that you have encased in plastic say on one side, this one coin says, good for $20 in trade. On the reverse side, or the obverse, as the coin collectors call it, it says Taylor Drury Peddler and Company Limited, Yukon Territory, Whitehorse. Charlie, could you tell us about these coins and where does the name Peddler come from?
Well, I'll start off with your first. Maybe we'll get the Peddler off right away. As you know, the store started in a small way in Whitehorse, and it developed. And Whitney and Peddler was our competition, and they were on the present site where our business is today. And it was just prior to the First World War, there was a great demand for copper, and they got interested in the Copper King and the various mines as we see them today being slowly developed. And they wanted to get in the mining business, so my dad and Mr. Drury said, well, let's go into partnership. So they went into partnership, Whitney and Peddler and Taylor and Drury. And Taylor and Drury had a 60% ownership, and this is where the present corner is, and this was in 1912. And later on, the mining business failed, and we took the rest of the shares over from Whitney and Peddler and went back to the original company, Taylor and Drury.
Good morning, talk back.
Yes, I wonder if Mr. Taylor might know, speaking of Indian names, whether Selkirk Street was named after Lord Selkirk or the Indian band, and whether Selkirk Street School was named after the band or Lord Selkirk. I'll hang up and let him answer the question.
Thank you very much. Selkirk doesn't sound like an Indian name, but Charlie?
No, the word Selkirk, I think, originally came through with the missionaries that came through from the Mackenzie River, and they went down to Fort Yukon and worked their way up to what's called Fort Selkirk at the present time. Now, whether it came through, you see, the district was called, before the Diocese of Yukon, I'm speaking about the Anglican Church, whether it was called that or whether Campbell came through and brought the name with them, I wouldn't say. But I know that the Selkirk School, I was there at the opening, I had to give a little talk on it, and the theme was that the Campbell Bridge was there, which was the man that found our Selkirk, that is to the white man's trading era, and he founded the place of Selkirk. So whether that ties in with your school, I wouldn't like to say that's a proven fact.
Yeah, but it's quite likely Fort Selkirk and all the other names
are tied in together. Yeah. Yes.
Good morning, Talkback.
Oh, good morning, John.
Yes.
This is in the form of a suggestion, and I think, believe it or not, this suggestion would appeal to Mr. Taylor, who is a good friend of mine. It's Bill Swainson speaking.
Yes.
The children's choir at Selkirk School have been broadcast several days this week in the morning.
Yes.
And I don't know if you've heard it, John, but it's been really beautiful.
Yes, I have heard it.
I was wondering if there's a possibility on one of your remaining shows before Christmas to have a few of them in the studio to sing, that people could see them as well with their choir leader, Mr. Barad, because I think this man has done a tremendous amount in the 2 years he's been in the Yukon, both at Jack Holland's school and Selkirk.
It sounds like a really good suggestion, but one that would have to be discussed with the technician and with the producer here, Reed Berquist, and also with WHTV, Ken McKinnon. We could possibly do it for Friday's Christmas show, and it's a good idea if they can technically set up for it. Okay?
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you very, very much for calling. Mr. Taylor, when were the T&D coins first introduced to the operation?
It was when the amalgamation of the two companies in 1912. And of course, my mother always said this was a bad day because my dad was so busy reorganizing the company, and I was just arriving. The stork was just hovering overhead, and the thing is, it wasn't very much much time for the newborn coming. So the thing is that my mother always said my dad sort of left me out in the cold until such time I was born. Anyway, this is what started, and of course, John, the reason we had them was that the paper money wore out. So the thing is that the metals at the time was the brass, which was the $5, $10, and $20 piece, and then the aluminum, which is a common article. Now we're making even beer cans out of it. It was almost a semi-precious metal at that time, and that was the other coinage, and of course it was soft.
And you mentioned earlier about it being good money as opposed to the Queen's money. I'll ask you about that as soon as we take this call. Good morning, Talkback.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to ask Mr. Taylor something.
Go right ahead.
Mr. Taylor, how come you don't have the old-fashioned telephones and everything around in your store? Maybe not in use, but hanging on the walls and that, something similar to the store at Carcross. A lot of tourists and that like to see these old things hanging on the wall, and many hours are spent reading about them and things like this. And why don't you have some old pictures, too, as well, and hanging on your walls or where the visiting tourists can have a look at them?
Okay, Mr. Taylor, how
now
about
hang
the...
Up so I can hear.
Thank you very much. How about the decor of the store and going
well,
into that?
Well, the thing is, this has been come to question, and prior to the high competition we had at the present time, everybody wanted something modern. They wanted a modern self-service store. And when you have pots hanging up on the ceiling and things like that, it takes a lot of climbing around, because that's what I did my first 10 years, is climbing up on ladders, getting things off high shelves, and it was a very inefficient operation. Now, the thing is that this still can be modernized, and this is a wonderful thought, and it's these outside directors that make a good company, and thank you for your thoughts. Now, the other question, John, was?
The one that we left was...
The lady had a second question. Oh, with regards to the pictures, I know that you haven't been up to Toyland lately, because if you go up to Toyland, you see a whole wall of all the pictures of Whitehorse from 1900 on, and I would only be too glad to explain you and show you where the present front of our store has been moved down from the old, which was the old original Masonic Hall. That's Masonic Hall number one. And it has been moved down, and that is the corner right now where the menswear department is, and up where the Santa Claus's toys are, is upstairs there. So someday, come on down, and I'll give you a reminisce of those pictures on the wall.
That's on the corner of Front Street and Main Street, and personally I prefer the old name of Front Street rather than First Avenue, as it's commonly known now, Charlie. And I'm certainly hoping that Talkback will be broadcast from that very corner, that very historic corner, again during Rendezvous Week, as it was done last Rendezvous Week. Good morning, Talkback.
This question is for Mr. Taylor.
Yes.
Well, Violet McGundy is my grandmother. and Olma Gundy died somewhere in 1927 or something like that. And I have several uncles named like Drury McGundy and Taylor McGundy and Joel Ledoux. I'd like to know how their names originated.
Drury McGundy and Taylor McGundy?
Mm-hmm. And Joel Ledoux?
Joel Ledoux, right.
Yeah. Well, I can... Is this okay? Go ahead, John.
Yes, go right ahead.
With regards to the McGundys, were a great friend of my dad, Mr. Drury, and again, this goes back to the early settlement of the upper Yukon near Little Salmon. And the thing is, the word McGundy was a derivative from the native people, but they did want to get this Taylor and Drury McGundy. And these two chaps lived a full life, and I used to work many a time with them, and I believe Taylor's still alive. And there's also Annie McGundy, and Annie is very much in the field. I was at the funeral where she was when we buried old Harry Silver Fox. And Annie was there, and that was named after my sister. And I would like to be double-checked on this, but I think there was two other children, and one was called Charlie McGundy and Billy McGundy, after my dad, after the two Taylor boys.
And the caller also asked about Joel Ledoux.
Joel Ledoux, I think that was off the traders that were down at the time of McQuestion and Mayo in 1893, 4, and 5. Right. I believe that's where he got his name.
Okay.
Yes, thank you very much.
And thank you very much for calling.
And
go ahead.
And Violet McGundy is one of my old sweethearts, and whenever... the time comes that she's run out of funds and she needs to take a withdrawal from our CarMax store because she saves her money down there. Why, she comes in and I can look after her needs and I give her an envelope and the money's back within 3 days. And these are the wonderful people that we traded with, and they're hard to come by. They're the best.
They're still with you, many of these people, aren't they?
They saw me the other day and says, Charlie, we deal with your daddy, now we deal with you. And this is the true, and they're the people that help to build our business, and that's why we make so much room for them.
Good morning, talk back.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question about the old paddle wheelers that used to go up and down the river. There were quite a few of them, there's some around now, but Mr. Taylor's been around for a long time, he'd probably know a little more about it. Exactly how many were there and how... What happened to the ones that aren't seen now?
The sternwheelers.
That's right.
Okay, Mr. Taylor?
Oh, the sternwheelers. My, that's a long, long story.
Yeah.
We spend a whole day on that, John. But the thing is that there was, as a little boy, we called what we call the boneyard. And I think the cask and the white horse is pretty near at that stage right now. But below there was the Bailey and the Joseph Closet, the Zealandian, the Anglian, the Bonanza King, the old Yukoner. Some can remember the Yukoner because she was just destroyed in the last 20 years. But a lot of these boats have terrific history. Then there's the old steamer Thistle, the La France, which is a sister ship. She burned up in the 30 mile. But there's no end to it. And
yes.
Then there was the White Pass. They bought out all the river boats around 1902, 1903, and they put the flyer fleet on. Which the steamer White Horse was she's one of the originals with her. There was the Selkirk, steamer Selkirk. There was the steamer Dawson, and
what happened to all of them? Did they just go to rot?
Well, the Dawson sunk at the Rink Rapids,
mm-hmm.
And the Selkirk. I think she went ground somewhere between Selkirk and CarMax. And they all had their accidents,
yeah.
and they rebuilt them. If they were good machinery, they rebuilt them, such as the Caskers number 3.
When was the last one taken off the river?
1950, wasn't it, when the road came through?
Mm-hmm. And I guess the Tushai was really the last.
Yeah, well, the Tushai.
It was strictly a tourist boat.
Yeah, she was strictly a tourist boat.
Out at Carcross.
Yeah, it was a wonderful trip, too.
Yeah. Getting back to trading coins, you were referring during one of the breaks of to... The coins that were used and printed for Taylor and Drury's store were referred to by the native people and by all of the traders as good money as opposed to the Queen's money.
Yes, I think it was the use of the word with regards to the native people. But We only had these coins where there was no banking facilities because the paper money just got filthy. And then the people that were moving out of the areas, like say the police or anybody else that were moving out of the area, picked up all the silver and took it out. So the thing is, we're constantly running out of a medium exchange. So this in 1912, they got started with this trade coins. And where the good with the bad came, the stuff would never wear out. And another thing is a marvelous thing for playing this gambling game they had under the blanket, much like the Oriental
stick people. Stick gambling,
I think. Yeah, under the blanket, because they could put the coinage in there, and the bronze was a little heavier than the aluminum. Therefore, they knew exactly what coinage, and they didn't have to look to see what was in their hands. And they put their hundreds in the blanket, and of course, the fellow called the tune, and out come your hand, and of course, who was the winner? And the problem developed is every time the steamboats came, we always had about, well, my brother and I were always decking or doing something on the boats. We always liked working on the boats. And there was, we used to have about 15 native people because we had to cut our own wood going up the river. So we'd land up at these stores and the gambling would start because it was a great, once the steamer came there, Guntioch they call it, once that came, everybody came because it was a big occasion. And of course the gambling started. No liquor in those days, thank God. But the gambling started. And these fellows would want to get in on the game. And they say, oh, that steamboat money no good. You've got to go up and get good money. So these poor fellows have to go up to the store and trade in all the king or queen's money, depends who's reigning, and get some good money and down, and the game would start. Another thing is we used it as legal tender because if anybody came out of the areas, as I said, we had police and the missionaries, and they would always get a handful of this and have it on their person, and we gave them, when they came back to Whitehorse, we bought it back off them at full value and sent it back up to the branch.
Our fascinating guest today is Charlie Taylor, born and raised in the Yukon, been in merchandising these many years. The program is Talk Back. The number is 667-7891. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. We'll be back in just a minute.
For the sunniest of southern exposures, see Atlas Travel. Take your sun goddess and fly to Mexico. Atlas Travel, in association with the Yukon Territorial Public Service Association, present Mexico in all its splendor. It's a charter flight you won't want to miss. You'll spend 16 wonderful days. Fly from Whitehorse on February 2nd. Spend a night in Vancouver at the Rembrandt Hotel. Then it's on to Mexico, where you'll spend 14 relaxing days at Mazatlan at the Hotel El Dorado. You get the 14 mornings with breakfast, transportation to and from airports, returning on the 17th of February to Vancouver, where you'll spend another fantastic night at the Rembrandt, and return to Whitehorse on the 18th. Reserve your seats now with Atlas Travel at 667-7824. Fly to Mexico with the Yukon Territorial Public Service Association and Atlas Travel. There's only 8 seats left.
Terrific toys are tumbling off the counters, spilling into the aisles at Jim's Toy and Gift Shop on Main Street. Dolls and building sets, games and toys for the young scientists, the doctors and nurses too. Trucks, books, even mind-bending jigsaw puzzles for the older folks. Christmas will certainly be happier than ever with fine quality toys from Jim's Toy and Gift Shop. Here's a reminder to the mothers too. The Yarn Barn in Jim's Toy and Gift Shop is a newly arrived shipment of yarns in all colors. There's knitted items, hobbycraft in fake fur and chenille too. Rug kits, macrame kits, colored and natural. Needlepoint kits and patterns along with afghans. There's more to see at the Yarn Barn in Jim's Toy and Gift Shop on Main Street. Jim's Toy and Gift Shop, open every night till 9.
Two items of interest during that break phone call, which we'll get to in a minute, but the news item on this morning about a fire down at the village. Firemen called out to the same house twice, and the last line in the news item says the two occupants of the house, Drury Magundy and his son, managed to escape the blaze. So that's no doubt the same Drury Magundy that we were talking about earlier.
That's correct, John.
Named after the Drury family. Yeah. The other caller tells us that he has a token, a trade token worth $1, aluminum, and it has printed on one side Highland and Belfry, Liard Post. Who were they?
They were early traders up the Highland River. I don't know too much about them because at the time I was a boy here, the Highland River was further away than Montreal is today because the communication lines were very difficult running through that area. But I knew there was traders there. I have seen the coins.
And they had their own coin operation,
similar to ours, and I believe they were in aluminum, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's what he said. Who printed these coins just before we get off it?
I couldn't say. I was still just a thought at that time.
Charlie, how did you get into the business? Now, we know
well,
your father started.
Well, if you want to go back, some of these ladies, like Mrs. Ryder, who still shops at our place, and Mrs. Erickson, that's still shopping there, and many others, could remember me as a little boy with two dogs delivering the groceries. And this goes back to 1924.
Did the dogs pull a sleigh?
Oh, absolutely. Oh. That's the way we haul it. And I was a delivery boy, and as soon as I got off school, I had 2 hours of delivering, and I got paid $15 a month for this, which was pretty good pay in those days. And then later on, we went to school, and my first permanent job was in Mayo in July the 19th, 1932. That was my first permanent job, and I've been working ever since, except for 1 year off.
Good morning, talk back.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, go ahead, you're on the air, please.
I was just wondering if any of these coins were about yet, if one could get to buy them or as a keepsake or something like that. Mr. Taylor knows if there's any around yet.
Mr. Taylor, are there any of your coins?
Well, I can give you the history. In the first place, there was $10,000face value, I guess you'd call it, released, and we were doing fine with them at the time of the Alaska Highway construction, and the American boys were going through building the Canal Road, and they just loved them, and they just got hold of them, and they thought they were the most wonderful things for a collector's item. So, just shortly after that, we brought Price Waterhouse in the picture, and they noticed in our reports, trade coins, $1,200 in Ross River, $1,000 of trade coins in Sheldon Lake and up at Pelly Banks and Pelly Lake. And they said, what's all this about? And I said, we told them we brought out some coin. Oh, gee, this has been illegal for years. So we had to put the price of an airplane and go around and pick all these coins up because they were we had never been properly audited. We didn't have auditors in those days. It was unnecessary. But as the tax structure and things began to change after the war, we had to get these experts in to solve things. Our business had grown. And when we collected them, we ended up with $2,300 worth. And at a director's meeting, it was decided that these should be locked away and a decision made about them some other time. Now, we've never made it our business because it's a family affair. But we have got some $2,300 locked away. Unfortunately, the aluminum are soft and they are not very eligible. We did get about six sets set out, and each of the directors have a complete set of which you can see at the TV here, done up in plastic. And we also have one in the White Horse Museum here, and people in Ottawa, the Mint in Ottawa, was interested in having something on it, so I sent it to one of their directors down there. So that is what is available, and if anybody wishes to see this block of coinage, I'd be only too glad to show it to them if they call in my office sometime after the new year. And
those
pictures at the same time, I'll be only too glad to show them.
So as far as you know, there are none available for collectors. I'm a coin collector myself and certainly would like to lay my hands on any of these coins. And if any of our listeners happen to have any, I'd certainly be interested in hearing from them.
There.
But that, ma'am, is the situation. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. Good morning. Talk back.
This is for Mr. Taylor again.
Go right ahead.
When I was a little girl, this is before they built that Robert Campbell Bridge, long before that.
Right.
My Aunt Annie, that's Annie Bill, Annie McGundy, and David Bill, her husband, lived across the river when they came up from Tananarive or, Carmax or any place there. They lived across the river in a tent frame, and not very far from where we lived, there's this two-story building, this old building, and I think it used to be a fox ranch. I don't know anything about it. All I know is I remember playing on the wires, the cages and stuff. And tourists ask me about this today, and I don't really know anything about it or enough about it to answer. I wonder if Mr. Taylor would... I'll hang up.
Yes, thank you very much. We've had that question before on the program, and I believe I was told that it was a fox ranch. But Charlie?
Yes, this dates back, as you know, the day of the early fur trading. The silver foxes and black foxes were unheard of, and they were a tremendous value. Mr. Drury bought three black foxes with silver tips for $2,000, so you can see what the value was. So they decided, the various people, that why not try and raise them? So this is the start of fox farming, and there was three farms across the river, of which the very little remains. Eddie Marcotte's place was right on the corner. There was a tower there where you could watch.
What was the tower for?
The tower was to watch the sex life of the animals, see if they were breeding.
Oh, is that?
And that was it. That was it, because it was a sensitive part of their time. And the thing is, they used to climb up there and watch to see how things were going with regards to the mating season.
Good morning, Talkback.
Yeah, I was wondering, Mr. Taylor, he said Caroline before. Would that be Shirley Johnson's daughter?
Gasoline?
No.
Caroline.
Caroline, oh.
No.
Charlie?
No, that's Caroline. She was in church with me the other day. Caroline...
Jackson.
What?
Jackson?
Jackson, that's correct. Yeah, you got it right there. Mm-hmm. Caroline Jackson.
Yeah,
she was named after my cousin, Caroline Copland.
Oh.
Huh.
He used to work in the T&D store in Tesland, too, I remember, when I was a kid.
Who did?
My grandfather, Shorty Johnson.
Oh, yes, Shorty Johnson. He was a very, very fine chap. He was a great man for carrying our messages. As I mentioned earlier on the program, we had to have these couriers that would take messages, and that was the only communication system we had. And he was a very fine chap.
Yeah, okay then.
Hey, thanks very much for calling. We're reminiscing about the good old days, and we're talking about the Taylor and Drury operation over the last 73 or 4 years, and this is their 74th Christmas in the Yukon, talking with C.D. Charlie Taylor, General Manager of the Taylor and Drury operation in Yukon. The program is Talk Back. The number is 667-7891. If you're out of town, please call Collect. We'll be back in a minute.
A half-price Christmas clearance. The Bay is having a half-price Christmas clearance today only, right through till 9 o'clock. All tree decorations, Christmas cards, Christmas wrap, all at half price. That's till 9 tonight at the Bay. And remember, if you want it, charge it at the Bay. Murdoch's Gem Shop is a complete giftware center. Whether it be the exclusive fireweed cups and saucers, or original Eskimo soapstone carvings, Murdoch's Gem Shop has everything for everyone. Gold nugget jewelry, handcrafted by Murdoch's, is manufactured before your eyes and fully guaranteed by the craftsman. Whether it be a diamond engagement ring or a lovely fur garment, whatever it might be, you'll be satisfied with the gifts on display now at Murdoch's Gem Shop.
A reminder that Murdoch's Gem Shop opened till 9 o'clock tonight. It's 2 minutes before 12, and once again, here's John.
Thank you very much, Reed. What line are we on? Good morning, Talkback.
Yes, I'd like to know if Mr. Taylor knew Skookum Jim.
Would you speak up, please?
I'd like to know if Mr. Taylor knew Skookum Jim, and I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you very much. Charlie, did you know Skookum Jim?
No, he was part of the legend my father spoke about. He knew all those gentlemen. When they most of them settled in Carmax, and he used to tell me about them, Skookum Jim and Tagus Charlie, and they were all friends of the company, and I think possibly it was on talking to Skookum Jim about all his money that Skookum Jim fund was made available and left in care of the Bishop of the Diocese of Yukon and the Commissioner of the Yukon Territory, of which this fund was laying, and it was supposed to be for the educational advantages of the Indian children, and of course, it later the funds were all expended on the Skookum Gym.
Good morning, Talkback.
Hello, John.
Yes.
Now look, I'm nowhere near my TV, but would you ask Mr. Taylor whatever became of that spiral staircase they had?
The spiral staircase?
Yeah.
Hey, that sounds like a good one.
And I can remember his dad tripping down those things, though, years and years ago.
Charlie?
Gosh, it's too bad that person wouldn't give his name, because, boy, he's got history in himself. No, well, those are...
I'll tell you, John, my name is Chuck Haynes.
Oh, okay, Chuck, we got you now.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you, my father took an apprenticeship in Derby, England. And his uncle, who trained him, had a spiral staircase.
Yeah.
And that was the... He couldn't have a store without a spiral staircase. So this is how we got to the upstairs.
Whatever became of it, Charlie?
My brother Bill has it in storage at the present time, I would like to get them reinstated someday again, because they were quite the thing. And I can remember one time there was some lady, she was just had a few more days to go before she had to have a little visit with the doctor at the hospital, and I took up these winding stairs because we had the apartment upstairs, and my wife pretty near about choked me to death for bringing her up there, because how she ever got up there is beyond me. But she only, the next day she had a baby, maybe there was sort of a wind up anyway.
When was the spiral staircase removed?
We took them down, I should imagine, in the late 40s. We revamped the store, and of course there were had no advantage, and of course, like all young people today, history is something you read about not to do anything with.
Yeah.
Mr. Taylor.
Yes, go ahead.
Could I correct you on a little bit of a date there on those spiral staircases? They were in still operation in round about 54.
Oh, well, maybe I lost a decade in there in my store. we had a storekeeper one time, and my dad was always shooting the questions at him, and he said, "Look here, Miss Taylor, do you think I'm a walking encyclopedia?" That's how I sort of feel like when I'm in the front of the telephone. So maybe I can slip 10 years once in a while. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, thanks very much for calling,
okay,
Chuck. Really appreciate it. Good morning, Talkback. Hello.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Oh, Charlie Taylor?
Yeah, would you speak up, please?
Oh, Charlie Taylor?
Yeah, hello.
This is Johnny John's car cross.
Oh, how are you doing? Boy, it's
great.
Getting that far out, eh, Johnny?
Yeah.
Good. Hey, you do better not shoot too many questions at me.
Well, it's nice to hear you talk about our ancestors. Like Bill Drury and Isaac Taylor, your dad, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
And I remember them. I was only about 15 years old, but I could go down there and get credit for telling Drury's story then. You know?
That was commonly known as Jawbone, wasn't it, Johnny?
Yeah, we used to call it Jawbone. Yes, right.
Huh?
And I remember Drury used to be the outdoor man, you know?
That's correct.
He'd come from Teslin to Atlin all alone in wintertime, the dog team, you know? Vine furs all over the country. All the Indians in the country. My forefathers liked to...
They're all fair traders, John.
Your dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for calling in, Johnny, because it's you people that made our business, you know.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Johnny, we're going to get you on Talkback one of these days. We've talked about it, you and I, and I'm going to try and make an arrangement.
We'll talk about Jim, and we'll talk about a lot of things.
Okay, Johnny, thank you very much for calling. Have a good Christmas, eh?
Yeah.
Say Merry Christmas to all my friends down at Carcross.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. Good morning, Talkback.
Good morning, John. This is Ruth Challenge.
Yes, Ruth.
I just wanted to say thank you to Charlie Taylor for my 23 years in the Yukon, because they hired me in Vancouver to come up and start their record department in April of 1949. And if it hadn't been for Charlie and the Taylor family, I wouldn't have been here. And I just want to say thank you to Charlie. Thanks a million.
Well, Ruth, I want to thank you for making this call. You were a very faithful servant. This is the way we use the old terminology. And now you're a very faithful customer. And that has been our good fortune. When a person leaves our services, they're generally still working for us in the form of bringing us a check every month to pay their accounts.
Well,
thank you, Ruth.
You're wonderful. Thank you very much, Charlie, and happy Christmas.
Same to you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for calling, Ruth. Good morning, Talkback.
Good morning, John. Will you ask Charlie Taylor if he knows how the Golden Horn got named?
The Golden Horn, that's a good question, and one that we've had
before.
Yes, I've
been asking for the last 5 years.
Well, I think if you sat at my mother's kitchen window, where Taylor Chev has their operation there, and you looked out the window, and you saw that morning sun hit that mountain,
many mornings,
you would know what it was named for.
Well, how did it get its name?
Well, I think it was the sun hitting and made that golden glow, and it made it look like the old-fashioned, you remember the cornucopia cone?
Well, I've been here for 30 years, and I've been watching it every morning.
And isn't it a treat? And especially right now, that cool, crisp morning. That's why I stay here and you stay here.
And sundown, the old gray mountain.
Yeah. That hasn't changed either.
Nope. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Good morning, Talkback.
Oh, John.
Yes.
Bert Bloom.
All right, Bert, how you doing?
Pretty good. I'd like to speak to Charlie a moment, please.
Go right ahead.
Charlie.
Yes?
Go ahead, Bert, my competition.
Go ahead, Bert. Charlie's here.
No problem, Charlie.
No.
No, I just wanted to call you, let you know that if you don't have one, I have an extra portrait of Taggish Skookum Jim, and it's made by D-U-C-L-O-S and Dawson.
Duclos is the name.
Duclos. Yeah. Do you know them?
Well, they were... They run their course when I arrived on the scene, but I have their complete set of their slides. We got Stuart McPherson, when he was alive, got all those Dawson pictures put on 35mm slides, and I have some 80 of them, and most of it's Duclos's work.
Well, this is, I'd say approximately, I'd say more or less 6x8, it's a blowing up portrait, you know?
No, those originally came off glass plates.
Oh, I see. So you don't need one then?
Yeah. They're very nice to have. I'd like to have a copy, Bert, if I could.
Oh, sure, fine. Drop them in the store and I'll get back to give it to you.
I've got to get a list of all my own customers before I peg out.
Okay, Bert, thank you very much for calling.
Hey, Merry Christmas to both of you.
Same to you, Bert.
Okay,
we'll keep Main Street open, eh?
Right, no
problem. Thanks a lot, Bert.
Right, bye-bye.
And I'm going to ask you about your wife, Betty, a long-time Yukon and Charlie, but we have to take a break first, and I want to remind our listeners we're going over time for obvious reasons. I'm sure we could go for hours on... with these stories and tales of the past in the Yukon and Taylor and Drury store. Our guest is Charlie Taylor, general manager of the Taylor and Drury operation, born and raised in the Yukon, been here all his life. The program is Talk Back. The number is 667-7891. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
This year, gift her with perfumes and colognes from Hogan's. Chanel No. 5 cologne is $4.50. Elizabeth Arden Handshell Lotion, cologne, and soap for $3.75. Fabergé Music Spray Cologne and Bath Powder, $5.50. And Liquid Bubbling Bath Oil by Village is $3.50. Gift her with perfumes and colognes from Hogan's, the Santa Store.
Starting today at 2 p.m., Car Care Datsun at 4th and Jarvis invites you to view the 73 line of fine Datsun cars. What a Christmas present to the family. With every brand new Datsun sold now, Car Care will supply free a radio and a complete winter package. See the 73 Datsuns today at Car Care, 4th and Jarvis. Enjoy a cup of Christmas cheer.
Datsun, the more for your money car. Datsun, the more for your money car.
Welcome. Welcome to Heidelberg. Heidelberg is brewed from pure spring water. Canada's pure spring water. To give Heidelberg a naturally refreshing taste. A bright taste you'll find in no other beer. A satisfying taste that makes Heidelberg so easy to enjoy. Beer after beer. Welcome to Heidelberg. Naturally refreshing because it's the one brewed from pure spring water.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Talkback.
Yes, good morning, John. I want to ask you why you don't have Mr. Drury on again tomorrow morning. He's too interesting. Mr. Taylor, I meant. It's too interesting just to have him one day and then not...
Well, you know. I hope to do some follow-ups with Mr. Taylor when he has the time, certainly.
Uh-huh. Can I talk to Mr. Taylor?
You go right ahead.
Yeah. Mr. Taylor, did Wee Willie Anderson from Dawson City, when he had his radio station, did he shop with you, too?
Well, he's always been a customer of mine. Of course, I'm not too interested in the men. It's the women folk that I like. We only like to see the women, the men once a month just to pay the bill. We like the women in there at least once a day. And the first time I ran into Willie was when I was making a trip down to Dawson. He had this volunteer station was going, and he was still having that cowboy stuff going in it. And he's really a past master at it. And I still listen to him every Sunday morning. And
well, I wish he'd come on every day.
Well, he's fun.
Are you going to have Wee Willie on talk back?
Yes, I am. I've talked to him about it, and he'll be on with us in January, and we're going to reminisce about radio in the Yukon and about that volunteer station at Dawson City, which I well remember.
Oh, good.
Okay?
Yes.
Thank you very, very much for calling. And we were talking earlier, and you mentioned again women, and your wife is a Yukoner born. How about, how did you meet?
Well, I got up to Mayo there, a lone little lad in 1932, and I was cooking for myself. And again, I was always the expert delivery boy, and I could always mooch a meal off somebody, you know. And this is all these women folk in Whitehorse used to have pie and cake and everything for me. So I thought I'd just carry on the same practice. And so I had a supplementary living on the delivery business in Mayo, because I was the junior clerk in the store at the time. And the McLennan family, boy, they had three girls, all top-grade cooks, and Mom, she was an expert, and they had scotch oat cakes, and they had everything, and I was there. Of course, why I hung around, I certainly don't know. Because one April the 1st, they had a beautiful plate of macaroons there. I tell you, they're the most delicious-looking things, all toasty brown, you know. And I got in these things, and I got the first one there, and I was chewing away, and boy, that was, there couldn't beat it. The second one was much better, and I kept chewing, but I kept getting more mouthful of food. I ended up with a whole mouthful of cotton battens. This was April the 1st. So why I ever married the woman for is beyond me, but it was one of the memories of memory was being able to meet Betty, who came from a Yukon family. Her mother came from Ireland in 1913, but her dad was one of the Klondikers, and he packed up the White Pass. And those boys in those days put 200 pounds on their back, and they did a man's job. And he later became a stagecoach driver, and he drove from all over the place. The other day, I was going through the new recorder at the new place at the library there, and I was able to check the old book and see where Betty's uncle had run the mail from Shoshana into Fairbanks or Iditarod and those places there. They were quite the family, and later on Mr. McLennan was one of the winchmen on the dredges in Dawson, and later on went into Mayo and became the fire chief. So I married the fire chief's daughter. I got on the voluntary fire department.
What year was that?
37 years ago.
37 yeah, years. Yeah, boy. Yeah. Good morning, talk back.
Good morning.
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mr. Taylor?
Hello?
Is it Mr. Taylor?
Yes, go ahead. He's here.
Well, do you know my grandpa, eh? My name is Chappie Harry.
Chappie Harry is your name?
Yes.
What was your grandfather's name?
Big Salmon Harry.
Big Salmon Harry.
Yeah. Yes. I knew the three boys, Chappie.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Big Salmon Harry is a good man. I worked on the steamboats with him.
Uh-huh.
And there's Big Salmon Charlie, your uncle.
Yes.
And Big Salmon George, and he's still alive.
Salmon
is that
George,
right?
Yeah.
Now, I got a good story on Harry, you know.
Okay.
The Yukon Rose, which was the last boat we had, it got stuck on the Hootalinqua River, the Teslin. I like that old name, Hootalinqua.
Oh, yeah?
I think you do, too. And the boat got, the Yukon Rose got stuck down there for lack of water.
Uh-huh.
So my brother Bill had to run, it was about 90 miles of river they had to do. So he and Frank Slim, who's still one of our customers,
yeah,
and he's still around town, you know Frank.
Yeah,
they got about four or five other native boys, and they got the teams, and they start running the stuff up to Teslin in the winter, and they'd run out of stuff at the store. So along the way, they came into your dad's place.
Yeah.
And all they had was meat. And, of course, Bill and his gang, they had a lot of good supplies.
Uh-huh.
So they sat around the campfire. Bill was pretty cold. It was running around about 30 below that night. And this is the story Bill told me. And he said they sat around the campfire, and they were all talking, and everybody was pretty hungry. Bill was hungry, and nobody made a move.
Uh-huh.
So Harry says, hush,
fire talk. Of course, Bill, my brother, he was pretty new at the game. He says,
What's
the fire say, Harry? He says, fire say, white man, feed me tonight. So, open them to bargains, and Bill fed the whole outfit out of the supplies. So that's all about your dad, Chappy.
Chappy, thank you very, very much for calling us here
on
Talk Back.
Goodbye.
And have a good Christmas. We're talking with Charlie Taylor. We're reminiscing about the days past in the Yukon and about Taylor and Dury's operation particularly. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wind up within the next 10 or 15 minutes. But meanwhile, we do welcome your calls at 667-7891. A reminder that the program is Talk Back, and certainly it is our hope to have Mr. Taylor back on the program in the not-too-distant future. Meanwhile, we'll be taking a break. If you want to give us a call at 77891, if you're out of town, phone us collect. We'll be glad to accept your call. We'll be back in just a minute.
Specials are bursting out all over at Nelson's Hardware. Step on garbage containers, the type you step on and the lid pops open. Stainless steel or plastic at 30% off. Brighten up your home with potted plants. Nelson's has flowering plants that are now growing and will bloom soon at a reduced price. These are lamarillas, regularly $3.98, now just $2.75. There are many sets of glassware, perfect for the Christmas gift that's hard to find, and they're gift wrapped. Ladies, get your roasters before Christmas with special lifters for roasts or turkeys, on special at only $1.99 at Nelson's Hardware. And see the Hokie Sweeper at Nelson's at $24.50. Nelson's Hardware, located at the corner of 2nd Avenue and Elliott. Nelson's Hardware in Whitehorse.
10-5 chicken from Dixie Lee. Topped in flavor and quality. Made from a secret recipe. For 10-5 chicken called Dixie Lee.
New to Whitehorse, Dixie Lee. Something to please the palate of every connoisseur, prepared with tender loving care. Dixie Lee.
Friendliness and courtesy. That's what you will find. It's the greatest you'll agree for tender fried chicken. Call Dixie Lee.
Tender fried chicken prepared by Pete and Gwen Hanchar. Call 667-7223 or 667-7224 for Dixie Lee fried chicken.
Tender fried chicken from Dixie Lee. Chops and flavor and quality. Made from a secret recipe. For tender fried chicken, call Dixie Lee.
Dixie Lee, 312 Steel Street at 4th.
Dixie Lee!
When you invest in a washer and dryer, you want to know what kind of warranty to expect. Speed Queen says it all on this impressive list. Lifetime warranty on stainless steel tubs and drums. 2-year warranty on all parts. 10-year warranty on washer transmission parts. A 5-year warranty on Primacote drums. Has Speed Queen left anything out? Not very likely. The Speed Queen washer and dryers have impressive names. The Diplomat. The Princess. The Ambassador, and there's even the Super Twin portable washer and go anywhere dryer. The Super Twin is the answer to compact laundry facilities in an apartment, mobile home, cottage, where space is at a premium. It needs no special plumbing or wiring. Maybe set on a counter, mounted on a wall, or placed on an optional chrome stand. With Hogan's as your Speed Queen representative, you're assured the Speed Queen washer and dryer to fit your requirements will be available. On a special budget plan, if you wish.
Good morning, Talk Back.
Hello, that's the thing you're pronouncing, Hootlinko? You pronounce it like Hootlink.
Well, you want to know how it's pronounced or what?
No, I'm telling you how it's pronounced.
Hootlink, but Hootlinkwa is the ending word mean river, doesn't it?
Where did you learn how to pronounce the word, young fella?
My dad.
Uh-huh. What's your dad's name?
Norman Shorty. Yeah.
Oh, well,
yes.
I won't argue with Norman. I know their family. But the thing, it was at Linko, Teslinko, all that was the old Indian name, the original name. And then they call it Hootalink for short. But if you go down and see the old barges, used to be at the White Pass, and they're like, it was all Hootalinkwa. But I won't argue with Norman because he's just as much an old-timer as I am. And he knows the language better than I do.
I worked with Norman years ago. Yeah, he sure does. Okay, so young fellow, thank you very, very much for calling.
Yeah, okay, bye.
He was very definite in what he had to say to us, certainly. What's it like in the old days running a trading post? You were up in Mayo for 10 years, I believe?
Yes, well, it was quite a life. You were sealed right in. As soon as the last boat came in, you had your supplies, your warehouse was full, your buildings were all separated in case of fire. Everything wouldn't go up in smoke. And the trader's house was generally away from there. So there was three basic buildings, or sometimes four. You had a warm storage and a cold storage. And but it was Mayo was a very thriving mining center when I was there, so it was more of a branch store. It was, for a matter of fact, in the in 1929, it was one of our biggest stores, and I had a wonderful opportunity working beside an old Scotchman by the name of Mr. Jeffries, who showed me the art of storekeeping, and I've never lost his traits, but. It was a wonderful experience, and getting all your supplies in, and you had to be so accurate to draw your merchandise in, because once the boat was in, you'd had it. And I remember the first one, I forgot the Crisco, and gosh, you know, we had to say no to Crisco, and at last we had to bring some over in the winter trail at 15 cents a pound, which doubled the price of the Crisco.
What year did you leave Mayo?
1942.
So your wife was with you in Mayo for some 6 or 7 years.
Yes, I begged off their table for about 3 years, and then I turned around and married the girl. I really fell in love with her. And
what did you do? We were talking about the first Christmas, Taylor and Dury Christmas in Yukon. What kind of Christmases would you spend in a isolated place like Mayo that's cut off more or less?
Well, we lived a very, very full life. I mean, liquor wasn't in the picture because we couldn't afford it, but we lived as a community. And I can remember we used to always have a central Christmas tree. There was no religion, there was no politics, and there was a little color at the early time because that broke down later on. But the thing is, in 1932, it was all one big family, and we all gathered together. And we had a great big picnic for a big Christmas party for everybody. And I remember one time it went down to 50 below, and I went over to see how Betty was doing, and before I married her, and her dad says, "Hey, you're not doing anything, young fella. Come on over." And we hooked up Archie Close's horses. Annie's still in town here. Anyway, hooked up Archie's horses, and we piled all the gifts, community tree gifts, and we ran around to deliver them all. And you hear those old jingle bells, old Archie dug out the jingle bells, and we really had a real good old time delivering all the stuff to the kids. We didn't have a Sunday school. It didn't have a Santa Claus suit that day because it was just too cold to take any chances. But we went around, and it was just one of those things you'll always remember. But we did have our own entertainment. We had our own. We didn't hire a band. We had our own bands, and we went to a dance. And when one outfit got tired, the next jumped in. I played a banjo, and Betty played the piano.
So Charlie, tell me something. Did you appreciate what you had then, as much as it sounds like you appreciate it from this distance?
Well, we had no. There was no such thing as ulcers. We just loved living, and I think things weren't important in those days. It was people. And I think this is where we've got to, when they talk about old-fashioned Christmas, let's get back to people. The things, I work in a store, and I see what things are doing, and it's the people that really count. The gift is to the person, not what you're giving them. And I think this is the true Christmas message we should be thinking about now.
Good morning, talk back.
Can I talk to Charlie, please, John?
You sure can. Go right ahead.
This is Jimmy Wood speaking, Charlie.
Here we go.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
If you remember, I went to Mayo the same year you did.
With Colonel?
Yeah. No, Colonel come a year later.
Oh, he did, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good.
And went duck hunting up there, of course.
Yeah, old Colonel.
And I was just wanting to remind you.
Yeah.
You remember Jim Mervyn's trading post money?
I had only seen it, Jim.
Why?
That's your wife's dad now.
Yeah,
okay, go ahead.
I get, every once in a while, I get a few inquiries from outside. Apparently these fellas that save this money collect it, and they, especially one fellow in Calgary, writes quite often to us.
Do you still have any of that?
No, but I can steer you to some. Dick Wallingham has a $20 gold piece, and Freddie Algar has some, and... But I don't have any myself.
That game was an aluminum, wasn't it, Jim?
brass, yeah. Brass for the more expensive ones, and aluminum for the cheaper ones, yeah.
Are you giving your wife good breakfast every morning to come down to work?
No.
You're not?
No, she doesn't eat much in the morning.
She doesn't, eh?
No.
Well, we see her every morning, and we're very, very pleased to have her with her. My wife, Betty, and her two sisters, and Flora Blyler, and the Kimball girl, all went to a commercial school in Mayo, and our Gordon McIntyre was the volunteer teacher. He was the full-time teacher with regards to for the territorial government, and these girls didn't have an opportunity to go on into high school, so he gave them a commercial course, and it's a thing that we feel very indebted to Gordon. He's certainly part of us in the territorial business billing at the present time.
Jimmy, thank you very, very much for calling us.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so long now. Good morning, talk back.
Oh, good morning.
Hello.
Good morning, John.
Yes?
It's Phyllis Kosh here. And I would just like to comment on your talk back show today. Very interesting. But also, I would like to ask Mr. Taylor a question, if I might.
You go right ahead.
Mr. Taylor.
Hello.
Hi. The Simmons family, George and Aubrey Simmons, were there folks ever here?
I believe so, and I know that George could be listening at Carcross, so I'm going to take it pretty easy on them. But I knew there was the two boys who Aubrey was the customs man, and George had a large flying program there, and then they had their sister. Their sister was there too, and both their parents were, I believe, in Carcross. Now, I think you should ask that question to George, because I'm tramping on his doorstep. And
I'm going to have, I hope to have George Simmons on this program, as a matter of fact. I've known George ever since I've been in the Yukon, and I'd like to get him on.
Yeah, and Aubrey was the member of Parliament for many years.
For 8 years, yes.
And he was one of the instigators of the new Imperial Mine. So these people are part of the builders of the Yukon.
Well, John.
Yes?
I was going to suggest, because I know George, I'm sure, has been here for many, many years, and I think it could be the most fun talk-back program and the most interesting to have Mr. Taylor and Mr. Simmons on together.
Well, I wouldn't want to bring two heavyweights like that together, because I want to spread them out and get full use.
John.
Thanks for calling. I've sat and listened to George Simmons for hours on end tell stories about the early flying days in the Yukon, and he's just hilarious. And certainly we're going to have him on our Talk Back show. Reed tells us we've got to wind up. Charlie Taylor, you've been, I think, without doubt, one of the most interesting guests we've ever had on the show since I've been on it for the last 20 months. It's been a real pleasure having you with us. And on behalf of our listeners and the management and staff here at CKRW, I'd like to wish a very Merry Christmas to you and your family and to your whole Taylor and Dury operation, all the people that work with you.
Thank you very much, John, and I do enjoy coming here, because I do think that the facts must be laid down. I've tried to keep to the truth, and there's so much history being remade these days that I think the recording of what is actually happening should be straight. And I thank you again, and to my listeners, a Merry Christmas, and we hope to see you in 73, because the store will still remain full of merchandise. Thank you. That's my pitch.
Charlie, we're hoping to have you back on the program sometime early in 1973, because as our listeners have indicated, certainly there's a wealth more of information and stories that could certainly be utilized. That has been our Talk Back program for Wednesday, December 20th. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Until then, this is John Dumas saying thank you very, very much for being with us, and have a real good, happy day.
The opinions and views expressed on TalkBack are not necessarily those of the station staff or management of CKRW or WHTV. TalkBack is meant for the free expression of the public. The time is 28 minutes after 12.